Today, I caught the bug. Thank goodness, not the bad kind. With zero-cost immunizations and preventative services, I can do my best to keep healthy.
If you are on Medicare or know someone on Medicare, call CareMore at 1-800-965-1217 today or visit our website at caremore.com.
ESPN.com Lakers podcast. Regular season version.
Oh, yeah. This is different. This is so much different than everything you have heard over the last 3 months.
That was all us getting ready. That was us, you know, getting ready for the season. Doing the things that you do to get ready, not necessarily in regular season mode, because the games don't count.
But you know what I've done?
The podcast didn't count.
What I've done is I have convinced the Lakers, as I think most of our fans, most Laker
of our
fans
fan
know. Most Laker fans
as Mom
know.
Knows.
Right, and our listener realizes, they're defending a title.
That's right.
And because of that, you have to adopt a defend a title mindset and become aware of the goal of the season is to retain that title.
Right.
I have convinced myself that you and I won the podcast O'Brien, and this year is all about defending it.
Right.
And I came into it with this podcast, the season begins.
We are certainly not going to be complacent. You and I, of course, being Andrew and Brian Kamenetsky. I'm Brian Kamenetsky of the LATimes.com Lakers blog. Obviously, at this point, joined by my brother, Andy.
In defense mode.
Yeah. In defense mode. He is not, we made our own rings. We actually went to the store the other day and bought ring pops. I got one of those blue raspberry, and people get impressed by the size of the championship ring. You know, yeah, sure, it's got diamonds and something called 15 karat gold.
Didn't know it existed.
I've heard of 18, I think. Is Jerry Buss cheap? Is he cheaping out? He won't get the 18 carat?
Maybe 15's more expensive because it's rare. It's more rare.
I don't know. Yeah. I think they invented it.
I think they actually, too. Isn't there a small sliver of the ring that's made out of, like, rare rhinoceros tusks?
I actually think...
they cut up a bunch of endangered animals
something
to
like
make
that.
These rings.
They're actually every...
I don't have that verified.
Every ring contains a small piece of a Honus Wagner card. So I think that's what's going on. But the rings are out. We got ourselves some championship ring pops. I got blue raspberry. You got strawberry.
And I had a guy carve my face in it.
Exactly. That's what we did. And let me tell you something. Complacency, not going to happen, but... I think our ring was a lot more delicious than the ring that they got.
Yeah, actually, the hardest part of defending our particular title and the ring ceremony is having the discipline it takes over 82 games in the playoffs not to lick it away.
Well, stuff sticks to it. You have to be careful. It's not even a question of it goes away. Literally, things gets in the way, things stick to it, and it gets gross. I think we should be like Kobe and just put it away.
Yeah.
We wore it home and we put it away.
Yeah, actually, it was funny. We had a meeting at the 710 studios, or over at one of the restaurants in the LA Live area, ran into Andrew Bynum.
Yes.
He was, walking around and he was in a t-shirt, Lakers shorts, and his ring.
Right. And I had written the other day after the Lakers opening night 99-92 win over the Clippers. That was Tuesday night. We talked on Thursday this morning. That was not casual wear. That the ring is the kind of thing you wear on maybe a nice date, an anniversary, a black tie affair, something like that. It's not just casual wear. Andrew Bynum proved me wrong.
Well, he had said actually after the game, because Drew has never struck me as much of a bling guy.
No,
I don't think I've ever even seen him.
I don't think he's got like his ears pierced or anything like that. Nothing that, you know, Kobe has the big diamond studs. I know
Lamar likes that stuff.
Right.
You know, Drew likes computers and,
and
beakers and stuff and like remote control cars and probably chemistry sets. But
right, exactly.
I asked Drew, you know, are you ever going to wear that thing? Because it's pretty huge. And he said it was probably
him after the game.
Tuesday. And he said that it was like a dinner type thing. I guess lunch.
Lunch.
Good enough.
Lunch. Casual lunch. And some video games at the ESPN zone. I would think that kind of hardware would hurt your ability to play video games effectively. It would throw off your balance.
Well, he probably puts it in his pocket.
I actually asked Sasha after the game if he had thought about, like, the insurance value of that. I don't think he really had understood what I was getting at, but the one good thing about having
Sasha's
the,
handler
I know,
would know.
The one good thing about having the faces on him is it makes those things a lot more difficult, I think, to steal and hawk on, like, the black market or something like that. It's hard to say, I don't know who that belongs to. I had no idea that was somebody else's championship ring with face on it.
I dare you to prove that is Sasha Vujicic's ring.
Yeah.
That guy with the long hair and the headband, that could be anybody.
Could be anybody. Just because it says Vujicic, I thought that was some sort of code. But yeah, those are gonna be tough to steal and put up on eBay. Which is good.
Sasha wants to put it on eBay. It's him.
Is he a trusted seller? Like they have that on eBay. Did he get a 5 or a 10 or whatever it is? How many ratings? So, the Lakers start off the 2009-2010 season as they finished the 2008-2009 season by winning. I thought they looked pretty good. They didn't blow away the Clippers on ring night. They didn't destroy them. It wasn't a romp. But they controlled the game throughout.
And when they had their starters in, it was pretty obvious.
Pretty clear.
Just how good they can be.
Right. Andrew Bynum, 26 points, 13 rebounds. Lamar Odom had 16 points, 13 boards, 5 assists, a pair of blocks, and steals, which was nice. That Kobe guy, 33 points. I like that Kobe got to the line 11 times. Most of it wasn't necessarily off penetration, but a lot of it was just living down low in the block. The Lakers dominated near the glass, in terms of scoring and getting easy baskets.
As well they should, well and they probably should. Will throughout the season. They managed to do that type of domination in the post without Pau Gasol on it.
Right, and I would say probably maybe 12, maybe 14 of Andrew Bynum's points came from just somebody, the lob. So that having that back in the offense where they just, from somewhere, as soon as Bynum's man leaves him, he just lob it somewhere near the basket, and he's so long, he goes and gets it.
Well, and it wasn't just baskets, too, scored, in the paint. Their ability to just get in the paint led to them living at the line.
Right. They were posting up everybody. And this gets to our next point. Yeah, but we talked about it on the LATimes.com over at the Lakers blog that we operate.
Plug.
Yeah. Plug. Go visit now. Press pause. Go visit.
No, don't press pause. You can do both at the same time.
Multitask?
Yeah.
In fact, keep clicking on this.
Show our listeners some respect.
I just don't want their attention divided.
No.
What we say is just too damned important.
But what we write is so damn important too.
That's true.
That your brain
and
will
the internet
learn
is forever.
Your brain will learn how to keep them all together.
Right. As a lot of people on spring break have learned, the internet is forever.
Yeah.
So that blog post, it'll be there. They want to know about the new guy, Ron Artest. New fellow.
Yeah. The Newbie. Guy that's not Trevor Ariza.
Hayes the new guy.
Yeah, I don't Hayes Ron Artest.
Hey, what's your name again? Oh, yeah, right. What's the new guy's name again? Oh, Ron. Right. Okay. Stat line for Ron Artest Tuesday night, not great. 3 of 10 from the floor, 1 of 5 from the three-point line. He was wide open for a lot of those threes, and they just didn't go down. But he had a big impact on the way the Lakers operated offensively and did some stuff that Trevor Ariza, frankly, can't.
No, he can operate in the post both as a playmaker and as a guy who can get his own baskets in the post, which is an area
that's under the line a lot.
Right, and it's an area where the Lakers dominate as it is. Ron can just add one more element to that. That's not what Trevor does. And in the meantime, we saw him, I think, capable, just a taste of the way he's capable of defending a wider variety of players, whether they're bigger, smaller, quicker. He can really do more than Trevor, assuming he's on board with the game plan.
Mike Dunleavy, the Clippers head coach, he actually referred to, when I asked a question about Artest in the post, he just kept using the word beast. He beasts people. He used the word beast as a noun, as an adjective, and I believe a verb, all in one
answer. Never with the connotation of beast of burden. They're not looking at Ron as an albatross over them.
No, he said he's a beast. He beasts people in the post, so that would be as a verb.
The Clippers got beasted.
Right. And so the adjective, he's a beast. That's an adjective. Or then he called him a beast.
Beastly?
Did he ever describe him as beastly?
Something like that. Wouldn't that be an adjective?
No, I'm throwing
out
different words.
Right, I'm just saying. So he used it in like three or four different ways in one answer, all using the word beast. I think that's...
Well, no, it could be an adverb, right? Wouldn't it be if you went beastly on someone, or like he did it beastly? Is that how it
works? I don't think it's an adverb automatically if you add ly.
We'd have to, what we need to do is get a grammar guest.
You know what's scary is I actually did spend a year teaching English. But you know, you have to look all this stuff back up. You forget the rules of grammar as soon as you're out of
CJ, book us Merriam-Webster.
Right. That's not one person. Merriam-Webster is not one person. It's not the dictionary is not named for a guy named Merriam-Webster.
I just mean get us the people behind Merriam-Webster. Get them on
get
the phone.
Get me Merriam or Webster. Webster, of course, being dead.
Whatever. I mean, get us the people.
I think he died like 200 years ago.
Is there not still a dictionary empire? Is there not still one of those people out there?
I'm pretty sure. Actually, no. I'm pretty sure it's all just on dictionary.com now. And there's no one there anymore. The office is empty. If you call, they're going to be, Webster is dead. We cannot get Webster.
Some old rotary. That's like some old phone.
Thank you for calling.
It's even older. It's one of those where you have to pick up, you know, the singular earpiece that goes to one ear. It's like an old, like Little House in the Prairie.
Like
yeah.
A cone?
If
you'd like to make a call. So they're gone. But it looked good.
You know who might know this stuff? Our guest.
Our guest, Eric Neal. He knows things.
ESPN.com.
He's a man of knowledge.
Eric Neal. He's got good grammar.
On the court, there are signs that the Lakers, they'll be different than they were last year. But Artest even got out on the break a couple times. He beat some guy. I mean, he's not Trevor Ariza on the wing. He's not us on the wing either. He's not
Eddie Curry
on
the wing.
He's not plodding down the floor.
No.
I mean, this is, you know, the guy's a pretty good athlete. More Ron Artest news though this week that I thought was interesting is if you get a chance, go either to the blog. Certainly the folks at ESPN would prefer you go to ESPN.com, but we have it posted on the blog as well. There was a profile on Ron Artest on E60, the news magazine, the ESPN 60 Minutes. That was very interesting. And it gets deep into the guy's personality and what makes him both interesting. It opens with him at eating dinner.
At a fan's place.
At a fan's house because they invited him, basically.
Over Twitter.
He asked, what should I do this weekend or something like that? And they said, why don't you come over for dinner? And he did. Which is cool. But people look at that and they think, wow, this guy's crazy. And they showed the scenes of Ron Artest earlier in his career when he was on the court crazy. And most of the highlights centered around his stuff in Indiana, like a lot of things that he did in Indiana.
And he had some incidents in Chicago, too.
Right. But these are earlier in his career. And I think the question that comes out of it, and, you know, without playing the entire profile, it's definitely worth going to hear, is whether or not can you rely on a guy? And this is a question that comes up all the time in sports. You know, Andy, can you rely on a guy to become something different than he's been, so to speak, over the course of his career?
I think it depends on the athlete. I mean, you know, he's in the news a lot lately right now because he's got a book coming out, and in that book he admits that he used to do a lot of meth, which is
Andre Agassi,
yeah.
Not Ron Artest.
No, I was going to clarify.
Okay.
Although if Artest does have a book out with a meth admission, if nothing else, I should be aware of it. I do a Laker podcast.
That's right.
But
I was just saying, if you hadn't clarified, we would have been in some serious trouble.
I was en route to clarifying. But you look at what Andre Agassi became at the end of his career, which was a respected, button-downed spokesperson for the game. You know, this very emotional, mature guy who would shed tears when he won a title. And he became a representative for the game, and he began his career as the enfant terrible. You know, he was nothing but a brat with the, you know, day-glow clothes and the wild hair, the earrings, and he was not...
Which turned out to be a hair piece.
Yeah, like a mohawked hair piece.
Some sort of hair piece.
You could never have told me at the beginning of Agassi's, you know, the images, everything,
right,
and the
exactly.
crazy Canon
sure.
commercials, that guy would end up one of the elder spokesmen and a respected athlete. You would not have been able to wrap your head around that. But people mature for different ways, and then there's guys who never mature.
Right.
You know, so it's a case by case basis.
Right. And we've talked about the self awareness that our test has as a person. I think that's going to play a lot into it. One of the things I think it's going to be interesting to watch though is everybody's waiting for our test to explode. They're waiting for something bad to happen. Things are, we touched on this debate yesterday. More technical fouls this season over under. Who do you think is going to end the season with more technicals, Ron Artest or Kobe Bryant?
I think it's going to be Artest, but not because Artest is going to have an explosion, but simply because he's Ron Artest. And other than Rasheed Wallace, I don't think there's any player in the league who has a shorter leash along these lines than Artest.
Except here's the thing. You know how many tees Ron had last year?
I bet you do.
I do. Yes.
I'm going to say 7.
4.
Okay.
He had 4, and the year before he had
contract
8.
Contract year.
Well, the year before was a contract year, and he had 8. Kobe's had more.
He's grown wise.
Kobe gets, the thing about Artest is he gets tossed out of games and stuff, it seems like, more frequently. But, like, that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. I think that reputation follows him around in ways that don't necessarily play out on the court. Kobe is a technical machine.
Yes, he is.
I looked this up yesterday. Kobe has 110 career technicals. I mean, he's played more games, I think, than Ron Artest, but Kobe had 11 in 82 games.
Well, he didn't miss
15.
Like, he didn't miss like a season.
Right. And he had 15 in the year before Kobe did. But you're right. Kobe didn't get the ultimate technical, which was being thrown out 73 games. I mean,
frankly, Kobe ought to get more technicals.
Kobe should get more, and Kobe complains more to the refs. I think he's going to end up getting more tease this year, but the perception is going to be over the course of the year.
You may be right.
That Artest is going to be that guy who's always going to be, you know.
But like I said, it's not because I think Artest is so out of control that he's going to merit the technicals. I just think, and maybe I'm incorrect, that he has a shorter leash because of that reputation.
But I'm saying, but I think the
reputation. That may not be
but
true.
I don't think the reputation manifests itself into actual on court tees.
Well,
I think in the playoffs last year, what happened, you know, was just, I think, you know, as that series started to get chippier with Scola and the fish and all that stuff, the refs getting just ludicrous.
And they were
even the Lakers thought some
well,
of those
and they were
that
doing
Artest
it
got.
In all the series. It
right.
wasn't just I other than the series between Chicago and Boston, where apparently Rajon Rondo could do whatever he wanted,
right.
without getting and I
sure.
think the Celtics in general get away with murder. I don't know why. I think maybe it's because Garnett scares the referees. And he kind of scares
you
everybody.
Them.
Yeah. But, you know, Rondo threw Kirk Heinrich into a scorer's table, and I'm not even sure got called for a foul.
I don't think he did.
I mean, which was ridiculous.
It should have been a foul. At the very least, it's a foul.
Yeah, you can't.
Foul.
I have consulted the rule book.
You cannot do
you
that.
You cannot do that. But I think our test, maybe that reputation doesn't come out in technicals as much as it comes to just getting the heave-ho.
Yeah, maybe. It'll be interesting to see what happens, especially in the context that he plays in. The media is going to be waiting for it and looking for it and looking for every little sign. I just don't think it's actually going to play. I was surprised last year when I looked it up. 4 technical fouls for Ron Artest. I thought it would be higher. I thought it'd be 8 or 9 or 10 or 11 because of what you're talking about, the reputation. I don't know if actually it plays out on the floor that way. And, you know, so it'll be interesting to see how, if there's a point at which we stop looking for the big thing, the way he's going to ruin the chemistry, the big blow up. Or if the minute he gets his first technical, it's going to be like, oh,
there he goes.
There goes Ron Artest being crazy. Meanwhile,
I even know which writers are going to write that.
Yeah, me too. And Kobe, you know, Kobe's going to rack up probably 15 this year. So, that's just something to look for. So the Lakers, they won their opener at home. They play, Friday night at home, Sunday night at home. I think they have, they play every night at home, until mid-December or something like that. 17 of the first 21 games for the Lakers are played at the Staples Center, which is their home floor.
You know who is not thrilled about that? Our wives.
That's right. But they'll be happier later in the season when they're on the road a lot. The question is, and a lot of importance has been put on this stretch. You know, the Lakers have to take advantage of this. They have to win, you know, 19 out of their first 21. They could go 20-1.
They have to win 22 of their first 21
games. If you look at the schedule, and I have, because I'm prepared, it's not necessarily, they don't play, it's not just that it's a home schedule. They have some games against some reasonably good teams, but it's not a brutally tough schedule either. They have They have four road games. One in Denver. That's a tough game.
Legitimately tough.
Right.
Game.
They play in Oklahoma City, which can be tough, but you know, certainly you'd like to think
that is not a tough game.
Houston, a game they should win, and Golden State, certainly a game they should win. The home games, they see Dallas, that'll be Friday night. They see New Orleans twice. They see Phoenix. They
Atlanta.
See Atlanta, Memphis, Houston, Chicago, Oklahoma City again, Miami, Utah, Minnesota. Congratulations, by the way, to Kurt Rambis, who won his debut in Minnesota. That was very good.
Good on him.
Good on him. So, it's not that they have a bunch of really bad teams on the schedule, but at home, you'd like to think the Lakers, you know, who were 36-5 at home last year.
That is an extremely winnable stretch of games.
It's a very favorable schedule. You look at that. What, after 21 games, they finally go out on the road, they play in Utah on the 12th. That starts a 5-game road trip. The first substantial road trip they have all year. Do they need, I mean, given how good San Antonio could be, how good Portland could be, how good Denver could be, do they need to win 18, 19 of these games to compensate for what's going to be a road heavy schedule down the road?
Yes and no. I think, yes, in the specific sense of, I think they need to finish ahead of Portland in the standings, you know, when the smoke is all cleared and the dust settles. I think they need to finish in front of Portland because they seem very unable to win in Portland.
Right.
So if they had a series against Portland,
that home
I think it's
matters.
Very
sure.
important
okay.
for them to have that. Portland aside, no. I mean, assuming that they don't lose enough that they're going to miss the playoffs, no, I don't think it's that important. This team has shown, A, that they can win on the road plenty.
They were 29-12 last year on the road.
Very good road team.
They won games in Denver in the playoffs.
Yeah.
They clinched, obviously, in Orlando.
Save Portland. I don't think that this team needs a home court advantage at all. I think they could win the ring again without having a single series outside of Portland where they have home court advantage. So, I mean, it matters in the sense of the Portland thing, and also you just want to be playing well, even with the idea that they're probably going to be pacing the season. But would I panic if they went 16-5? No.
Right. This question to me gets to what fans should be excited about with the Lakers. It's the way they play isn't dependent on, you know, the Staples floor. And let's be honest, it's not that I don't think Laker fans are great fans. I think they are, and I think they're underrated.
Absolutely
and they get
underrated.
And all these things. Staples Center is not a great home court. It's just not. People try to make it loud around playoff time. The fans are excited. They're into it. They're standing. They're doing all these things that fans are supposed to do. The building is huge.
It's cavernous.
It's massive, and it is very difficult to keep it loud like a Utah, like a Sacramento back in the heyday when the Kings mattered and all these things. It's really hard to keep that building loud. The Lakers don't get a traditional home floor advantage that other teams get. The flip side is, too, when they go out on the road, part of the reason I think they were 29-12 last year is the popularity of the team, the popularity of Kobe, cuts into the home court advantage that other teams have. Half the building sometimes is filled with Laker fans. It's like when the Yankees go somewhere, all the transplanted New Yorkers go out and fill up the stadium.
Yeah, plus they may actually get more jacked up in a good way playing in a louder stadium, a more just animated stadium.
Kobe says all the time, I like to play in enemy territory. I like when people boo me. I like that motivation. So people should look at this and, yeah, you want them to win every game.
82-0
Dennis Green would
sweet.
Say you play to win the game.
Absolutely.
And you know, they're going to lose some games. You don't panic with this team if they say even if they went 15-6, you know, you'd wonder why they weren't playing as well as they could, but you don't say, "Oh my god, this is going to come back to bite them later on," because they're the kind of team I think that is set up to be able to win anywhere.
They're like
they
San Antonio.
Right. And it just doesn't matter where they play. Seeding could matter, and you certainly don't necessarily want to go into Cleveland. You don't want to go into Boston and those things in the finals. You'd prefer to have home court.
But I don't think it's a deal breaker for them.
I would agree. So, something to watch for, you know, how much significance people give over the first 21 games. They certainly could win 20. They could win 19 or 20. be nice to take a couple early.
Well, Charlotte's
games
not in there, so it's possible to win them all
over the Utahs of the world. But yeah, so
is the Denver game looking
Denver
at
game
the map
is on the road?
Is J.R. Smith going to play in that game?
Yeah, I'm almost positive. J.R. Smith.
7-game suspension.
Yes.
Does it end by then?
Yes, he will play in that game. J.R. Smith will be eligible to play on the Friday the 13th.
That could have been a potential game changer and a nice break for the Lakers.
Playing on Friday the 13th. There's an interesting subplot that we'll probably come back to later. Just the Nuggets playing on Friday the 13th.
You know what? That's a little goofier a couple seasons ago when they were really scary to themselves.
It would have been scarier a couple seasons ago. But they still, you know, Kmart, J.R. Smith.
I had an interesting...
Guys, you know, they could change a little bit when the moon comes up or something.
I had an interesting observation about Kmart when we watched that preseason game that when they played the Nuggets.
Interesting, says you.
No, no, our tweeps.
Well, let's let these people decide.
Our tweeps found
this. Okay, what was your observation?
Kmart has so many tats.
Right.
I mean, he's got a
boatload. A lot of ink.
That, I mean, everything on him looks tattooed. He's got that 3-day shadow beard. It actually looks tatted. It looks like a beard tattoo.
Right. Much in the same way that I've gotten so used to bad Russian accents on TV that I think real Rush, like actual Russian people who just speak the way they
speak. You tell Vladimir Putin, knock it. Just who you kidding?
Come on, man. That's so weak.
Exactly.
Your accent sucks, man. So, yeah. I think that's a good point.
You always tell,
You can no longer differentiate between...
Andrei Kirilenko's a poser in your mind.
Right. You can't differentiate between the ink and what's real anymore with Kenyon Martin.
Yeah. So, that sort of just struck me
I don't even know who he is anymore.
Struck me as kind of funny.
Yeah, it is.